So my name's Tim Heuer. I'm one of the program managers on the Windows XAML team. We have been working with XAML for quite a while. And I wanted to share, when I was preparing this presentation, I was thinking about all the different technologies that I've worked on for Microsoft. And I actually don't have a CS degree. I'm kind of self-taught. And you can see I started in Access and Delphi. And I was just kind of going back through my legacy of what I've worked on and was looking at all the different technologies that I've used and that I've enjoyed using and came to a conclusion about the ones that are highlighted here, that there's a common thread here, right? And that thread is .NET. That no matter how the platform has changed, whether I went from web to client, trying something new on the mobile platforms, I was always in the .NET world. It was I felt very productive. I still feel very productive. And we just keep getting more and more benefits in the .NET framework, base class libraries, and the tools are, in my opinion, just world class. So we're here to talk about Windows 8. You have options, but like my friend here, I choose XAML. So I've been working on the XAML platforms for about the past four and a half years or so, working with Silverlight and now Windows 8. And it's been a really enjoyable experience, and hopefully you've been able to dabble a little bit as well here. So we are talking about Windows 8. Windows 8 brings new opportunities for developers with the Windows Store, greater access to your apps, greater discoverability, interoperability with the Windows subsystem, which we'll talk about in a little bit, as well as the familiarity of .NET as a .NET developer. So this session, I'll assume that you know .NET. That was good. Everybody raise their hand, so or you wouldn't be here. You know some XAML, or at least enough to understand what I'll be showing you. This is not an intro to XAML course. Some of them, the things that I'll be showing you are very basic, just to demonstrate the concepts. But I'll assume that you know some XAML. And thirdly, you're probably concerned, right? I think there was a lot of confusion when Windows 8 came out. What role does .NET play in Windows 8 app development for Metro-style apps? So hopefully I can dispel some of your concerns and let you know that your skills are not lost, and in fact, you'll benefit from everything. Now, the last thing you might be here for is this was in the description of this session. I didn't write it, but if you thought that I was going to help you make a couple million dollars, I wouldn't be on stage. I would have that idea. So I'm not going to demonstrate like how you're going to be acquired by Facebook or something like that. But hopefully you'll be inspired to realize how simple it is to create Metro-style apps, be a part of the Windows Store ecosystem, and then I'll give you my PayPal account. You can pay me royalties if you choose to. So the message that I want you to leave with today is this one, that the things that we're going to demonstrate and talk about are both familiar as well as some new concepts. But I really want to focus on the familiarity. This is .NET. It is the CLR. It is the base class libraries. It is C#. It is VB. There's that part of what we're going to talk about isn't changed. The new part is there is some new API surface areas. Some things have moved to different places because of the Windows runtime, which we'll discuss some examples of those and why maybe some of those have moved as well. But for the most part, you should walk away feeling like, hey, I'm going to install Visual Studio. It's not C#, Prime, some weird language or anything like that. It's still everything that you are used to and familiar with and should be able to get started and get successful right away. Has anyone developed any phone applications? Okay, a few people. So one of the things that I like to tell people when looking about XAML and Windows 8 is there's a tendency to draw an analogy to, hey, this works in WPF and it's not available in here. And there are some features that work in WPF and are not available in Windows 8. The one analogy that I like to have people think about is the Windows 8 XAML model is most analogous to the phone model. So if you're looking to draw some parallels, that's probably the best place to start rather than looking at WPF. But other than that, If you've done phone applications, a lot of this stuff will be new, or will be very familiar to you. So these are the things that we're going to focus on in this session. I'm going to show, I think, six demos is what I have planned. Hopefully I can get to them. We're going to talk about the developer tools and what we've released in Visual Studio 2012. Not a deep dive in the tools. I know there's been sessions. The keynote was great from Jason Zander and crew. There's a lot of newness in Visual Studio Ultimate and things like that. Not talking about that. Talking very specific about Metro-style app development. We'll cover the .NET framework, what are some of the nuances, and more specifically, what you as an app developer can do to kind of share some of the .NET code across your applications, and how you can contribute and be a part of the WinRT ecosystem. If you're not familiar with the acronym WinRT, you'll see it everywhere. It stands for Windows Runtime. That's the underlying APIs for Windows 8. Then we'll look at what is new in Windows UI XAML. That's the namespace for Windows 8 XAML. I'll demonstrate that your development patterns are still completely relevant, and talk a little bit about MVVM, and actually that'll be one of our demos. Talk about some data for apps, and then finally look at resource management, which is one of the probably most different things for .NET developers to think about in Windows 8 development. So let's look at Visual Studio. So Visual Studio 2012 RC was released. You have the Express Edition for Windows 8, which by installing that one thing, you have everything you need to create Metro-style apps in .NET, or actually any language, right? C++ or JavaScript as well. But VB and C# are absolutely first-class citizens there, and everything you need is available in that single download. Of course, and in fact, one of the things I'll demonstrate requires a professional to use some of the portable class libraries, which we'll talk about. But other than that, if you know, isolating to Metro-style app development, Visual Studio 2012 Express contains everything what you need. The same great language support for .NET, refactoring is all included, code snippets, you know, all the productivity things that you could want out of Visual Studio are there as well. Now, for the professional SKUs and things like that, if you use ReSharper or VS Commands or these various Visual Studio add-ins, if you're familiar with the Express model doesn't allow plugins to be installed. However, the Pro SKUs obviously let plugins to be installed. And all of those plugin vendors are working hard to make sure that your .NET development experience is as productive for Metro and WinRT development as it has been for desktop and web development. So all those plugins should still work in the IDE. And again, I don't work for either one of those companies, but I know that they're hard at work making sure that all the productivity benefits that they deliver on top of the extensible platform of VS are available to you. The other thing that's new in this release is Blend is integrated into Visual Studio. You'll start seeing mention of Blend for Visual Studio, and in fact, when we run it here, we'll see that that's what it's called. So this release, what the Blend team has done, is taken a pretty substantial effort on the XAML side and combined code bases to what Visual Studio 2010 had, which had its own XAML designer, and Expression Blend had its own XAML designer. Now, what the team decided to do was, it's probably smart to make those the same, so now Blend as the standalone design tool, as well as Visual Studio, actually use the same design surface. It's the same code base, and so all the features and functions for the editor and the design surface are the same. Now, from an IDE standpoint, there's some differences in functionality, which we'll talk about from Blend to Visual Studio. But that Blend, when you install Windows 8 Express, you get Blend as well. So similar, again, to the phone model where you install the phone tools, you get the Blend designer as well as that. So there's no additional thing you need to download to have the Blend development experience there. And then what we've done in Express for Metro-style apps is done some very specific things for Windows 8 development that we'll walk through to help you understand packaging model for Windows 8 apps, which is this AppX model, we call it. Your apps get compiled basically into this OPC zip file called a .appX extension. Very similar looking to a zap file. Contains your content and manifest and describes the file. And Visual Studio helps us do some deployment for development, remote deployment to tablet machines, ARM devices, etc., as well as the store integration, so being able to reserve your store name, you know, being able to start that process from Visual Studio, as well as associate your store developer account to your application you're developing, and publish from Visual Studio additionally. Now, I won't be covering any of the team system functionality here, but all of the process of packaging, being able to compile, package, create a package, and do those things are available in TFS. So if you use like a continuous integration server using TFS, you can do automated builds and you know, get to an APX file from an automated build standpoint. The only thing I don't think it does is obviously push to the store, and that probably wouldn't make sense. So let's talk a little bit now about the .NET framework. So .NET is alive and well. You should feel okay being a .NET developer. Like I said, I know that when we launched Windows 8, there was some concern because there wasn't a lot of mention about .NET versus JavaScript. But .NET is very much a first-class citizen, and you can use all the wonderful things in C# and Visual Basic that you enjoy. Now, what we've done is Windows Runtime is this API layer for Windows 8. And what Windows Runtime is this native API layer that allows us to write code to Windows. Now, how many people have ever done this? Okay. So the idea behind, one of the ideas behind Windows Runtime is that the native API layers are now available to any language in the language constructs that make sense. So we no longer have to do any DLL imports for probably the most common. Now, it's not to say that you can't do that. You can still do that and pinvoke when you need to. But for most of the common things that you'll do in the Windows subsystem, these now exist in the Windows runtime. These native APIs now look and feel like base class libraries to a .NET developer. So these all exist in the Windows .star namespace, of which XAML is a part of that. We're a shipping component in the OS. And when you use those, and we'll look at some of them, it just looks like another base class library. You're not importing anything. You're not annotating anything special. So you have that same productivity in your development experience, but the benefit of actually using the Windows subsystems to do that. You can also use C# and VB to create WinRT components. There's a whole session on WinRT here at TechEd. I'll demonstrate a very quick example of this just to show you what I think are some of the misconceptions out in the community about when you really are and aren't creating a WinRT component using C#. And then the other thing to keep in mind is pretty much Windows 8 is async everywhere. So if you've never done async development, this is probably going to be one of the newer things to you. I think async programming makes you a better programmer. It makes you think a little bit smarter about threads and how you construct your application. But it is a little bit of a mind shift if you've never done that before and you're used to doing a lot of things. Now, the benefit that the .NET team has done is given us these two lovely, awesome keywords, async and await, to make us as developers very productive in not having to do a lot of event handler completion statements and tying things together, which you can still do, again, if you'd like. But for the most cases, we think people will be using these keywords to make themselves more productive. And then the compiler does some magic on wiring up all the things it needs to for the synchronization context. So the reference assemblies for when you're developing in Windows 8 for Metro-style apps, you're essentially dealing with a set of reference assemblies. It is the .NET framework. It is the CLR. The difference is you're building on top of a set of reference assemblies that are scoped to this Metro profile, or we call it the .NET framework core profile. And right now, this profile is specific to Metro surface area development. So any APIs that you use in these reference assemblies are guaranteed to be safe and certified through the store certification process. Once you start going out of those, and this is a good example of where pinvoke might get you into trouble, you think you can use some native library, you DLL import it, you pinvoke, and you run it through the store certification tool, which again is one of the tools that ships in Visual Studio. And it fails because that API is not deemed Metro safe. So sticking with the reference assemblies will keep you along that. Now, part of the design principle on the .NET framework in creating this profile was that we wanted to reduce surface area redundancy. So you'll see some things that probably aren't there anymore in the system.namespace. but most likely have an existing place in Windows RT, in the Windows.namespace. Some of these things are things like globalization. If you've done a lot of globalization or culture info type things, a lot of that is now available to us for the Windows platform and a common thing across all languages, not only C# and VB, but JavaScript and C++. So now we have this common globalization structure that everyone can use and easily, right? As .NET developers, now it's just Windows.foo and we use it. So that is some of the design principles around why the .NET framework profile is the way it is. Redundancy, and also we've made the .NET framework a little bit more modular in addition to that. And there's some results of that. I don't know if anyone is a framework developer here, but most likely you've been doing a lot of if-defing in your code to be able to, reflection is probably, is everyone nodding their head, wants to throw things at me for reflection? So there's some things that have moved in reflection that are causing some of the noisier complaints, I would say. But things are just moved. There's not too many differences, with the exception of emit is probably one of the bigger differences. And then the last thing that we'll demonstrate, too, is this concept of portable library or portable class library projects. This is the one thing that I was mentioning is not available in Express, but it's a project type. This has been in CTP for the past year, and now it's a part of this release. But the portable library project is something that you as .NET developers can use to target multiple platforms at a binary compatibility layer. So a lot of framework developers have, a set of source code, and then they have different project files for Silverlight, for .NET 4, for Windows Phone 7, and really they're just setting conditional compile statements, and the project file is empty but just links a bunch of files. Using the portable class library project, you can have one project that targets all those things I just mentioned, and have binary compatibility or source code compatibility at that level without having to change things. Now, it's not the end-all, be-all. There's probably going to be some scenarios that don't make sense, but I'll demonstrate using one where we can create a common view model in a portable class library and use that across a desktop application and a Metro-style application at the binary level without having to do any if-defs or copying or linking code files. And then the other thing that we wanted to stress is if you are a Silverlight developer or you are a XAML developer, the two most common patterns that are used are still totally applicable. For the simpler apps where you have the traditional code behind model, where you have your view, you have a button click event handler in the code behind of that file. That model is totally there, fully supported. There's nothing wrong with that, for simple apps. it involves a little bit more coupling of your UI to your logic, which translates into sometimes harder testability, which is why the more popular pattern for app development is this model view, view model, or MVVM model that you may have heard about. So the MVVM model is one about separation of concerns. It's very similar to MVC if you've used that model, but allows us to separate concerns by segmenting our views and our data and the layer in between that binds those two together. This model is very much driven off of the XAML's binding infrastructure, which again still exists in Windows 8 XAML. There's no difference there. The one difference is that we will not have behavior support in this release. But I think that we'll see some open source libraries fill that for us. The view model approach lends itself very well to test-driven development. I know yesterday Peter Provost from the VS Test team did a session about unit testing in Visual Studio 2012. You should check it out on recording if you weren't able to attend it. But the unit test framework fully supports Windows 8 Metro style development. And if you follow the MVVM model, your testing process will be a lot simpler. A lot of view model frameworks have already converted to Windows 8 development. Two specifically are the more popular ones, MVVM Lite. As well as Caliber and Micro have been working really hard to adapt their frameworks to Windows 8 Metro style development. And I actually think MVVM Lite is exploring the portable class library approach to be able to get their source project at a much more manageable approach there. So let's jump into some demos here. So I have, this is the Windows 8 release preview, same thing that's available to you today. On my machine, I do have both the Express Edition and the Ultimate Edition, so I can show the portable library work here. But let me just walk through a couple things here and demonstrate things. I'm going to use C#. That's what I'm most productive in. Everything that I'm demonstrating can totally works in Visual Basic as well. So when you when you start creating a new project, and again, the Express SKU is very targeted towards Windows 8 development. So you won't see desktop things there. You won't see Silverlight. You won't see web projects. It's very much a Windows 8 Metro client development story. So we have some different project templates that we've enabled for you, and I think we're one of the first projects to actually use the preview image that's there. So we've tried to do our best to create some previews of what these templates are. Now the blank is exactly what it sounds like. It should be blank. It's not totally blank. There's some things. There's some helper things in there for Metro UI. And the grid and the split are two kind of UI patterns that you'll see the Windows team, the Windows user experience team refer to a lot. And actually, if you've explored applications in the store, you'll see some of these themes a lot as well. So we're just going to walk through a couple just simple things here. So when we create an application, you'll see that the structure is very similar to a XAML application. We've got this code behind approach. we've got required assets for a Windows 8 application to exist in the store, and I'll show the manifest in a second and point out where those requirements are. Then we've got some helper files. This is the blank template, but it has this one helper file which contains a lot of styles, custom styles for various types of UI that is going to be pretty common in most applications. So things like app bar styles for buttons that are in there, using the symbol font to display glyphs and things. And we'll show a couple of that as well. The one thing to note here is that in the references node here, is everyone see that okay in the back? I can zoom if I need, but just shout if you can't. The references node here, you'll see two references, and they kind of have this interesting icon here. .NET for Metro style apps and Windows. So you notice that there's no system dot, you know, there's no iteration of system dot different types. And what we've done, what we've decided is that the API surface area for Metro apps is small enough, and most likely you're going to use various different parts of it, that we're just including the entire API surface area as a reference for you. So when you're developing a Windows 8 application, you don't have to think, do I have that reference? Do I need that? Where is that? Everything's by default automatically included for you. Now the reference assemblies still exist in different individual files, but this is kind of a new mechanism in Visual Studio that allows us to say, hey, I'm referencing this overall SDK and everything that's within it. So you don't have to do anything here you don't have to do anything additional to reference WinRT or .NET. Now for a Windows 8 developer, we have this new concept of this manifest. Manifest is required for Windows 8 application development. There's nothing .NET specific in here, but I wanted to call it out that because it is required for you to successfully deploy an application. And that's why we have certain, you know, default assets for logos and the store logo and things that are required. But this manifest is where you set some default things about your application. You can set when you associate yourself with the store, you get, you know, a specific package name, you'll implement your developer certificate to sign the application. And then these two other areas are Windows 8 specific. One is capabilities. If you've ever done any development for the phone, this might be familiar to you. Capabilities is a concept where you can't do anything in the API until you've said that your app is possibly going to do that. And this is a part of the Windows 8 kind of sandbox and security constraints that are a part of our app model. And this is, you know, kind of to give the user confidence to be able to protect the user, make them aware that when an application is using location services, that you know that they're using them. So I can still use the APIs. I can still write code for geolocation as an example. But if I run the application, it would fail because I don't have this capability declared. And in the IDE, I can declare it by just using the checkbox. This is basically an XML file, so if you prefer XML over designers, you can open it in an XML editor and get IntelliSense as well. But the important thing to note is that, you know, you won't be successful in using some of these things if you don't declare the capability. Most common one we feel is going to be internet access, so that one's always on by default if you're using the templates. However, if you're not using internet access, you want to turn that off because you'll fail store certification in one of the passes if they say, hey, you've declared internet capability, but you're not doing anything over the internet, so you should uncheck that. But if you want to use, you know, webcam to take a picture, that's a good example there. The other thing is declarations. So declarations are other kind of extensions. So in the Windows 8 keynote this morning, Linda talked about these contracts and be able to share data between one app and another. That's what we call a declaration here or a contract. In fact, that one's the share target contract. So these are things that if you say, hey, my app, I want it to be a share target, or I want it to have search capability, I want to tap into these contracts to kind of light up in Windows 8, this is a place where that you would do that. Now, we've actually also made that easier for developers by way of templates. So in a new project, I can say, I want to add a new item, and I want to add the share contract target. And when we do that, we will do a few things for you. We'll give you some XAML, some stub XAML, and some code. We'll tap into your application object and add the necessary override for the event, because it's a different activation path. So when somebody clicks on the tile of your application, that's one activation path. But if I'm reading my mail and I say share to Tim's app, when I click Tim's app in that share term, that's actually a different launch activation path. So by using these item templates, we wire up that code for you. And we'll also go into the manifest and do all the declarations for you. So there's some for the most common ones. There's share, file picker, search. I think those are the three that we created some templates for. Let's close this. Now, if we go into XAML, we can see that we have the same good XAML that we're used to here. And I'm just going to copy and paste some code here. So the XAML is going to be the same. We have available to us now. The one thing that is still a release preview here. Application manage button, click. As you see. In fact, let me do this way. So one of the things that we're still working on is perf of the warm-up of the designer here. So let's see if I can let it get warming up. Not cooperating with me. Maybe we'll go into design view here, trick it out. No, of course not. What's it? Oh, sorry. Everyone's yelling at me, but this is saying screen resolution. I'm freaking out. Why does that think it's not right? Because it's not, of course. We want you to have a good experience, so we require a higher resolution. Let's reload the. My last demo, I ran out of disk space, so this is like a joy. Okay, there we go. So we'll load the designer here. We can see that we have the same designer experience. And in fact, if we go to, this is one of my favorite tips that not a lot of people know. If you double click on the tab, it actually switches to XAML or design mode automatically for you. So helpful little tip. But we have this new kind of design experience here for you. And in fact, we have this little device pane that I just closed. Where is it? That apparently we didn't expose a menu option for. All right, we'll get back to that in a little bit. So the you can see that we kind of try to emulate the shell of the tablet design, but we have this this design experience that allows you to still visually see the split view and also interact with the elements. So if you wanted to kind of see the document hierarchy, you can still do that. And this is the same experience in Blend as well, that we have, you can drag and drop from things. You can see that SDK show up, so I have the live SDK installed. I can drag the sign-in button there. I can right-click in here, and I can do some template editing. Now, the one difference between Visual Studio and Blend is that The template editing experience in Visual Studio is going to be very much a XAML editor experience, whereas in Blend, the editing experience is more visually. And we can see that in the release preview. The thing that we've done is finally hooked up Blend in Visual Studio. So I can right-click on the file and say open this in Blend. And we'll see that Blend for Visual Studio launches. This is Blend. Even though it's Blend for Visual Studio, people are looking for the installer for Blend. This is Blend. You're seeing it. So you've already got it. It's already installed. So once we have this, you can see the same type of thing here is that it's the same design surface, the same functionality. Here's the device pane here where we can say, hey, I'm developing my application for that snap view that Linda demonstrated when I snap an application, or portrait or landscape, and what does that look like? Or I'm working with different resolutions. How is my app going to react in different resolutions? I can turn off the Chrome if I want. I can change the theme of my application. But I can also go in and do templating. So if I want to edit this button template, I can get the same thing that I've done with other applications, and you can see I have a much better design experience in Blend for template editing or animation. So I recommend if you're doing those, you'll still very much use Blend. I think if you're a XAML developer, most of the time you have both tools open anyway. This is no different. The same benefit applies here. The good thing is that the design surfaces are the same between Blend and Visual Studio, so I guess the good and the bad. So the bugs that show up will show up in two places. Is that right? No, I'm just kidding. No, it's a... I'm not kidding, but it's good to have that commonality versus what we have in Visual Studio 2010, where there's some slight differences in features and functionality and how possibly maybe they render. So these are the exact same code bases that operate there. So let's close this out. And let's go ahead and talk about... Let's do another example here. So what I'm going to do is add a scroll viewer and an image tag here. Reformat. And what we're going to do is we're going to show some Windows runtime behavior here. So I'm going to do a button click event handler. And when I go in this click event handler, the first thing that I want to do is I want to interact with one of the Windows runtime APIs. And this is the file picker. So this is similar to Open File Dialog. This is basically the new version there. Now, you can see that we get the same IntelliSense capability on all the Windows namespaces. So again, these are native APIs that are projected for C# and VB developers. And I didn't DLL import anything. In fact, I just added a using statement to Windows storage pickers. And I get this picker API. I can do whatever I want with the picker API. So I'm saying, hey, I want a new picker. I'm going to look for JPEG files, and I want you to start in the pictures library. Now, the API calls this thing pick single file async. You'll see almost every Windows 8 API has async at the end of it, and that's explicit, right? So you know that it's going to be asynchronous. Now, I could use this, you know, wire up some completed delegates and event handlers and do some chaining of events. But what the language teams have done for us is given us these two wonderful keywords. I mark my event as async, and then I can just say await this async method. And in fact, if you see, if I don't do that, the IntelliSense that I get will actually show me, I'll keep it hovered, show me in parentheses awaitable, as well as there's an error here saying, hey, the await operator can only be used with an async method. Mark this async or return it as a type of task. So the language service is helping me understand the benefit that I can get out of this. And by doing this, the return type that I'm going to get is the actual return type of that async operation. So instead of getting an async event handler back, by using await, I'm actually getting that return type. So if I didn't use await, in this case, I would get an iasync result handler of type storage file, and I'd have to use some event. But now using await, my var file, this is a storage file. I already have that. I don't have to do any recasting or anything like that. So now the next thing that we want to do is use that. And we're going to add some more using statements here. So once I get that, that file, which is a type storage file, I'm going to go ahead and access the stream, create a new bitmap image for setting my image element in XAML. We've added these two APIs for images. These are performance you should look at. So if you have like some 8 gigapixel image, but you're only going to display it in 100 by 100 pixel size, you should use these properties in the bitmap image so that we only decode what you're going to render and not take that perf hit on decoding all the pixels. So we're going to use the set source here, and we're going to set the value of picked image, which should be there. So IntelliSense is just not waking up yet. Now, the other thing that I wanted to point out about what the .NET team has done is created a litany of extension methods for us on top of the Windows runtime APIs. I'm just going to show a quick example of stream. I'm not going to use it here, but when I use a stream object, you can see this is the new icon for extension methods that I have, because sometimes when working with Windows runtime, they require certain types of streams. Actually, this probably is new for you if you haven't used it yet, this iRandomAccess stream. So what do we have in .NET? Well, we have stream. So how do we get from stream to iRandomAccess stream without some funky casting? Well, the .NET team has created, this is just one example, but has created a set of extension methods that are tapped onto the BCL, extension methods for WinRT APIs to allow us to kind of get back and forth between more BCL-based class library, familiar library types to Windows runtime types. So stream is just one of those. They're all over the place. So you'll see a lot of different things across the Windows runtime that does that. So let's go ahead and run this here. Now, the one thing that I'm going to do is run this in the simulator. So we've given that ships in the tools as a simulator to kind of simulate the tablet experience. And so let's go ahead and just do this here. I'll pick my image, and you'll see that I have my image there. Now, I put this image in a scroll viewer. And by doing that, by wrapping something in a scroll viewer in Windows 8 XAML, you automatically get gesture support. So pinch, zoom, we will respond to rotation and things like that. For rotation, you still have to do some, but like pinch to zoom and stuff you'll get for free in the scroll viewer. So I have this, and I want to pinch zoom it, but it's not working for me because my laptop physically is not a touch laptop. The good thing about the simulator is you'll notice these other kind of adorners here on the side of the simulator. We have touch simulation built into the simulator. So if you don't have a touch machine, you can still kind of test your touch experience. And so this is the pinch zoom one. And you see that I have two things here. And how this works is it relies on a mouse wheel, or most effectively on a mouse wheel. So I hold down my click, and I just move my mouse wheel, and it will give me that touch experience. So for most of us developers who are sitting at a desktop with 8 multimon situation, who doesn't have 8? Okay. Maybe it's just a Microsoft thing. I don't know. But no, I only have 4. Sorry. No, just kidding. But, if you have, most of us are working on desktop machines, high power, multi-mon situations, that, maybe you're not the senior guy on the team, so the budget for the touch monitor went to someone else who's been there for years, and, you don't want to go over and ask to use it. So we have this capability in the simulator to kind of give you that experience. So we have the pinch to zoom. You'll see that we have the rotate mode, as well as these other things. So if you want to see how your app will respond in portrait and landscape mode, we have those capabilities built in as well. Changing the resolution. So Windows changes different scale factors. So if you have a higher resolution, we look for 2x size images. You can test those capabilities as well. In addition to some store helpers here as well, this copy screenshot is intended for when you're submitting to the store and you want to take screenshots of your application. Here's a good way to do it, other than print screen, I guess. So that's the emulator to kind of help us be a little bit more effective here. Now, I mentioned this concept of portable libraries. I'm going to go into Visual Studio Ultimate, and I'm going to create a new project. I'm going to choose the Windows tab here. I'm going to choose this project called Portable Class Library, and I'll just use all the default names here. And the first thing that you see is it's going to ask me as a .NET developer, like, okay, so what do you want to target? And I could say, well, I do want to target Silverlight 4. Actually, I want to target Mango. And, I can basically kind of this cafeteria style. And the result of my choices here is going to dictate basically the reference assemblies that are available to me that meet all the common things across those platforms. Now, there is a slight bug in the RC where that it's forcing you to choose Silverlight 4 over Silverlight 5, and so that's been fixed. So it's not necessarily a false positive, but you may be confused if you're like, I only want to do 4, 5, and Mango. There's some nuances in the release preview here, but basically I just decide, yeah, I want to target all these platforms. Great, give me that. So now we're creating a class library. This is a .NET class library. It's not Windows runtime. It's not anything special. It is a class library that is specific to this subset that we just selected in that first step here. So now let's go ahead and create a view model here. So I'm going to call this the person view model. And we're going to give it some properties here. Actually, we're going to implement the INPC interface, which is, if you're not familiar with that, is how change notification happens. So you should always implement this interface. And if you're doing view model work, you most likely always will. And then the next thing we're going to do is we're going to show. So the goal here is we have this view model of this type person. I want to use it in my Metro style application as well as my desktop application, my Silverlight application. So I want to also show doing some commands. So I'm going to implement the iCommand interface on this function called delegate command. This is a very common pattern in view model development to create this stub delegate command. You don't actually have to do it this way, but it's probably the more popular approach. And so now I have this delegate command, which implements the iCommand interface, which allows me to bind a command to my XAML without having to use the code behind approach. So now in my view model, I need to go ahead and implement that command. And so we've put in our constructor here. Now, for sake of demo purposes, we're doing a debug write line when the command is executed. Again, this is probably something more important, like committing sales transactions or something like that. But so essentially we're saying I've got this person view model. When it's newed up, the constructor is saying, hey, I want to create a new command. That's going to do this. I'm just using a Lambda expression again, same C#. I'm exposing that this command as such here as an iCommand, which allows me to do data binding. And then I'm just doing some property change notification here. So this is probably the simplest MVVM demonstration you can get. But I've done this in a portable class library now. So I'm building this. And I have this binary. I have this portable class library 1 DLL. So now let's go ahead and add a new project. We'll add a Metro style app. We'll do blank. And we're going to set this as the startup project. First thing I'm going to do is add a reference to my project here, portable class library. And you notice I didn't link a source file. I haven't done any ifdef or anything like that yet. I've added a binary reference. For simplicity, I've added a project reference. I could have browsed to that DLL file, same result. So I've added a reference here. Let's close some files. And let's go into my page here. And we're going to add some page resources. I'm going to add this view model as a resource here. I'm going to add an XML namespace. Now, what I just did is I want to point out, zoom in a little bit. This is probably one of the different changes that is going to be more different for XAML developers. So our XAML platform to date has been a managed environment. Now with Windows 8, it's a native environment. So we have XAML available to C++. If you didn't know that, that's one of our bigger features. And in doing that, the CLR namespace kind of using statement in XAML kind of didn't make sense anymore. So we've refactored a little bit of our infrastructure to understand how we do XML namespace declaration in XAML. And the result of that is that we've landed on something very simple that's kind of language agnostic in this concept of using. So similar to what you do in a code behind in both C++ and C#, I guess VB, sorry, we didn't choose imports. Forgot about that. It was a spec defect, I guess. But we've landed on this concept of using. So instead of CLR namespace, where you provide the namespace in the assembly path, we just say using, and you point to the assembly. No assembly path is needed, and in fact, is just not honored. So by doing that, we've had this reference, so we have this using statement here. Now I've created a local resource for my view model, and by doing this, XAML is just a way of instancing types, right? So I've just created an instance of person view model here. And now let's go ahead and add some content here. And so what we've done is we've just added a stack panel, and I've got an input box and a button. Now you notice I've gone to no code yet, and actually we won't need to go into any code. And so I've said in the command for the button, I want you to bind to this save person command that's exposed by this view model. And I'm using this explicit source path to the resource here. So this command basically is saying, hey, when button is clicked, which is the invoke of this particular type, run this command, which is save person command on this resource. And then I can also pass information into it, in this case a command parameter. So I'm saying pass in the text from the element person name, and that's going to be the parameter for this command. So if I've done everything right, and run this. So now I'm running the Metro style app that has a binary reference to a portable class library. We spent hours on this splash screen. So we want to, you know, delay load it so you can appreciate it. I think what actually I have is debug symbols here, so. So I can click this button. You notice I wrote no C# code. So I click the button. If we go to our output, here's our output. It says Tim Heuer, which is what the invoke command did. So we wrote no code. This is kind of demonstrating again that MVVM is still totally valid for you. And in fact, we've used this portable class library instead of even this Metro profile. So that's great. You've shown me nothing new that I couldn't do before. Let's add a Silverlight project. And we'll set the Silverlight project as the startup. Add a reference to the portable class library. No linking source files. Go into the main page again here. Let's build. And now XML namespace portable. There's our portable class library. You see that Silverlight uses the CLR namespace thing there. I'm actually going to go into our Metro app and copy this. Now Silverlight doesn't use page as the default, so let's do user control, resources, portable person view model, X key, VM. And I'm actually going to paste the same code here and run the Silverlight application. IE as well has an awesome splash screen, so just want to make sure you saw that. My friend Sean Wildermuth tells me if I do this, it goes faster. Yeah. See? Works. So now we'll put in a different name here. We'll click save. Again, we're not doing anything spectacular, but notice in the debug output window, it works. So we've created one class library that represents our view model and enabled us to create different views. Now, our views are the same, so it's probably not the best example, but you know, I could create a very, very tablet-specific Metro-style view and then a phone view, which are very unique, right? They have unique characteristics. But using the view model approach in the combination with a portable class library, I can get binary compatibility or source compatibility at that matter. But I didn't have to link any source files. I didn't have to ifdef anything. So this is a very powerful feature available to .NET developers if you can get it down to the portable class library. Now, when I mentioned, it's probably not going to meet everybody's needs, but you should explore it as a code sharing mechanism if you have multiple app targets and you want to maintain a very common code base there. Now, the other thing we talked about is Windows runtime. So I'm going to go and create a new project now. And how many people have seen WinRT toolkits or libraries out on the web that call themselves a WinRT toolkit in C#. Anybody seen a couple of those at all? Nobody? Nobody searching? There's a bunch out there. And they call themselves Windows Runtime Toolkits or libraries or helpers or whatever. I will tell you that if the file that you're adding a reference to does not end in .winmd, it is not Windows Runtime. So what most people are creating is just class libraries that are great. There's nothing wrong with them. And in fact, if you're using a managed application and you just want to use managed code, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that model. But I want to make sure that there's a clear distinction between when you're creating a Windows Runtime component versus just a regular .NET class assembly, a class library. So when I choose class library, I'm just creating normal .NET stuff. Same thing, compiling to DLL, compiling to IL, .NET can use it. C++ cannot use it. When I choose this option, Windows Runtime component, that's when I'm creating a Windows Runtime component, obviously. And the difference is the templates actually are identical with two key differences. Number one is the output type. In class library, you would see this option. Windows Runtime Library, you'll see this option. WinMD file, that's what we're creating. In fact, in the release, I think we changed this to say WinRT component just so it's a little bit more clear. And then once you choose that you're doing a WinRT component, you conform to the rules of WinRT. Now, this session is not about those rules. There is a WinRT session that will be happening at TechEd. If you're wondering how do I create WinRT components or why should I care, that would be the appropriate session to go to. But let's just go ahead and create a method here. And so again, I'm just using .NET. And I'm using all the goodness of .NET, right? So all my helpers and extension methods and BCL. So I've created this component that basically says, say hello to whatever input comes in. The output of this, you can see, is a WinMD file. Now, I'm using C# to create a Windows Runtime component. So this means now it's available to any Windows Runtime language or project type, including JavaScript. So I can add a new project here. I can say I want to create a JavaScript project. And I'm going to add a reference to my Windows Runtime component. And I'm just going to add some things here. Whoa, that's not the right one. Uh-oh. Get my cheater. I'm not a JavaScript guy, so I got to cheat. Sorry. So I'm just adding a button here. This is absolutely not the way to do JavaScript Metro development, but I'm just kind of showing the example here. So I now have, in fact, let me show this. Again, we've used C#. And you can see I get IntelliSense on the class that I've just exposed. And we can just to show that it projects it appropriately. So one of the benefits of being a .NET developer is you can use C# to create Windows Runtime components. If I start this application, you can see that I've called from JavaScript, called into .NET, and me as a .NET developer, I've not had to learn anything new other than the rules, you know, of basically understanding what constraints that I have to work in for .NET development. Now, let's go back to the slides here real quick. So now let's talk more specifically about what we did in the XAML platform for Metro Style App development. So the one thing that hopefully you've seen in just the quick demo is that XAML is the same XAML, right? So it's the, you know, there's some slight nuances of the using when you're using user controls. But for the most part, it's, you know, angle bracket types, it's type instancing, data binding engine is still there, view model development is still completely valid, and you know, everything should be familiar. What we've done in the Windows 8 XAML side of things is that all those primitives that are the same across our XAML platform is we've really done a lot of work to make them touch optimized, right? So You'll see almost on every UI element that there's tapped events. There's pointer events. So these are tapping into the new touch APIs and direct manipulation and those things that are available in Windows 8. And so you can build an application and use these events that we've done the work in all of these. Like the scroll viewer example is a good example. It's really, you know, what you see in XAML is just, hey, I'm putting this scroll viewer, which I'm probably going to get some scroll bars by the nature of that. But I also got gesture support by built in by doing that. So we've done a lot of work building in the touch infrastructure, making all the controls first class and, you know, touch friendly and Metro UI designed as well, right? So Metro UI is a very specific design. So out of the box, all the controls conform to the UI guidelines of Metro style development. Now we do have some new UI controls that are available. Same familiar XAML structure. So we do have these things called grid views and list views that have these unique experiences on how they are selected. So you have the swipe gestures and the start screen is an example. This is a grid view, right? So I don't have a touch machine, but if I were to swipe down, it selects it. So these, I'm using my machine, you're not even seeing me. I'll show it in a second. But these grid view and list view are items controls, basically. So, you know, when you're looking at XAML, it's very familiar. I have this list view, and list view has items, and I can apply data templates to items. So even though they're new controls, the way you interact with them is the same way that you've done in any XAML platform before. We have these very unique experiences in semantic zoom that Linda demonstrated on the start screen, that pinch to zoom of zooming in and out of grouped views to really give your application a really good experience in viewing a lot of data. And then we have some of the simpler things, you know, like app bar is probably going to be prevalent in every application. So we built that for you to be able to, again, respond to the appropriate gesture when the user swipes up. And then the Visual Studio, we've added some templates there to make sure that you have the right buttons that are appropriate and hit targets and things like that. We've included our animation library. So the UI that you see when Windows, you know, when the start screen comes in and the items kind of cascade in, or when the app bar comes up, you know, it has these easing functions. We built all of that into the platform. So not only do our controls do that, and the app bar is a good example. We listen to touch in the app bar. When it animates in, it's the proper animation that uses the same Windows subsystem animation that Windows uses, as well as what JavaScript uses. So we plumb that in. But you, as an app developer, could also use that same transition, that same animation. And we expose those in two ways. One through theme animations and the other through transitions. So I can have a grid that if I want the grid to kind of, you know, ease in from the side, I can add to my grid, I can add a child or a transition to my grid that says, hey, I want this reorder or whenever the grid gets repositioned, I want to add this reposition transition, which is one that we have. And I want it to be offset by 300 pixels or something. And by just adding that declaratively, I didn't have to write any code, I'm tapping into the independent animation system in Windows 8, I'm getting the proper animations, I'm getting GPU-accelerated animations, and we've done all that work for you and exposed those in our APIs for you to use. And then lastly, is there any ISVs here that have, or anyone that even develops custom controls for your own company? So the extensibility platform, we have a huge third-party ecosystem in XAML and in .NET, right? Not only on the library front, but also on the UI front. Our extensibility model is still, from the developer side of things, is still the same. So we still have a generic themes.xaml file that you'll create, and you'll create all your control templates in there. The concept of default style key and everything, dependency properties and attached properties, are all the same in Windows 8 XAML. There's a slight difference in deployment and how you, as an ISV, would deploy your application or deploy your control. And the main reason for that is one thing that you'll notice, if you haven't noticed already when creating an application, is we don't embed resources in the DLL anymore. So as an ISV, that's something to understand. I no longer can email you unless I completely self-contain it in my code, which is possible, but I can no longer just email you a DLL and say, here's my control suite. Right? So by default, we don't do any embedding for you. And the reason for this is that the extensibility model for managed developers is the same extensibility model for native developers. We wanted a common model that we would be able to support over the course of the framework that was common and similar, and we create the same developer experience for both. This is a result of that you know, we didn't want to have two resource embedding technologies to pull out the streams and do them two different ways. So there are some things that you have to think about that are slightly nuanced as a control developer who is deploying redistributable controls. And if we have some time, I can get to that here. Let's go to show some of these experiences here. So I'm going to launch a couple applications here. So MSNBC is a XAML application. Watch it crash right after I say that, right? It's going to. Oh. I blame the internet. So this is a XAML application. This is a grid view control that they're using. And this, in fact, is something that we call a variable size grid view control. You can see that this particular tile is different size than this because they've given different weight, or maybe they didn't have an image for this story, so they're only using text. And this is actually a grouped grid view control, where this is their first group of items that has their featured items. And you can see here that it has topped headlines. They're doing a cool thing by listening to the scroll events to be able to change the background color. But in additionally, they've also implemented semantic zoom. So on the keyboard, that's a control minus and plus gesture if you don't have touch and can't do the pinch or don't have a trackpad. So these are the groups that are visible to me. So I can go and just immediately jump to the business group, and it takes me to that group there. Again, control minus and control plus. And so that we've built in that capability for you to do that. We have a control called semantic zoom. You say angle bracket semantic zoom. You provide your zoomed out view and your zoomed in view. And if you're using data binding and the UI paradigm here is that you are using the same data source between your zoomed out and zoomed in view, we do a lot of the work to kind of give you this experience of saying, oh, I've clicked top headlines. So when we go back to the zoomed in view, we know how to pass that information along and scroll certain things into view. So again, a good example of like a very unique Windows 8 experience. And we've built a lot of this into the control for you. The app bar is another example here. Let's get into here's a code. Let's read the code story here. Flame, all right. So while we're reading something here, when I right-click or when I gesture, we get this app bar. Now, this is actually two app bars in their particular application, a top app bar and a bottom app bar. And this was very simple for them to implement because we have a property on page called top app bar and bottom app bar. And you just put the controls in there that you want. And these are just styled buttons. We've done the work to do that animation to respond to that gesture, that edge swipe, for you to be able to do that. So let's go back into Visual Studio here. And one of the good learning things is to kind of use this grid application template. And let's just run this. And you'll see that it looks very similar to the MSNBC application. This is all sample data. So we have different groups. This is a group grid view with not variable-sized items. But I have multiple groups here. And I can click on a group to go to that group. This is a list view. None of these have selections. So that's why you're not seeing the selection capability. But I can go to that item. In this view, you can see another control that we've created that I have these adorners now that go left and right. This is called a flip view. So it's now going back and forth. Think of this as an items control. Now we've just given you this control to toggle back and forth between items. Now notice that I'm clicking the mouse here, right? When I scroll over, look at the scroll bar and notice these adorners here. Now let's go back into the simulator. And I'm going to switch to touch emulation. And notice how there's no real kind of, I just clicked there, so it's kind of getting the scroll bar there. But there's no real mouse kind of hover state for a touch experience. So, So in the simulator, how we do touch emulation is we kind of reroute mouse events. As I was hoping to show you that basically you wouldn't see, in a true touch experience, you actually wouldn't see those flip view adorners because it doesn't make sense, right? We just know that the user has tapped and swiped to go to the next item. There's no need to show those adorners because the user has responded to that gesture. So an example of how we're doing the things for you. The scroll bar in a touch experience is not this thick scroll bar. It's just a hint at one that there is scrolling capability. because you're not, most likely in a touch experience, you're not going to be tapping on the little arrow in the scroll bar. You're going to be panning left and right, similar to this experience here, where I'm panning more than anything. So we've done a lot of that work to integrate those capabilities into the XAML framework for you. So I highly recommend looking at this example, the GridView application example. That it doesn't implement semantic zoom, but if you want to know how to do semantic zoom, the Windows SDK examples are very good ones to demonstrate that for you. So for the sake of time, I'm going to go through a couple more here. So I want to talk a little bit about data as well. A lot of people are concerned about, you know, where can I get my data from? Now, the WCF is built into the Metro.net profile, as well as the OData team has done a lot of work to make it capable for consuming OData services in Metro applications as well. So we can go ahead and choose, you know, a traditional, basically the ad service reference model is still valid for you. And in fact, when we do that here, so this is the Microsoft Translator SOAP service. I'm in a Metro style app, so I've added a reference to this. We'll give it a namespace, translator. And it does the same thing that you would expect, right? The benefit that we get out of ad service reference as .NET developers is I get a strongly typed proxy to be able to just write code on rather than to have to do HTTP requests the whole time. So if I can create a new instance of the language client. And the one thing that's great is notice the APIs that they created. Notice what the proxy created. If I was to do that ad service reference in a Windows Form application, I wouldn't get this type information. I would get translate as my API. Now, because it knows it's in a Metro-style application and async is the new black, we're basically saying we're going to create translate async for you. We're going to create it as the right return type so that you can use those await and async keywords on it. So the service model, as long as it's, you know, a standard SOAP service in this case, you'll get that for free. The you know, you as a service endpoint developer didn't have to change the way you developed the service. It's just that the proxy that gets generated knows, oh, I'm in this, I can do these things for the developer, so I'm going to do it this way. The same thing applies to OData. Now there is an OData session later. But let's see. So Netflix is the canonical OData example we use. So I can add service reference to Netflix, and I can get a reference to the catalog. And do data service queries and different things on that. Now, the OData story is, like I said, there is a session on OData at TechEd. The OData story currently is that ad service reference that I just did is available only in the Ultimate Edition of Visual Studio, not in the Express Edition. Now, at release, what the team is going to do is actually take it out of the Ultimate Edition and make it as a kind of a NuGet package or a standalone add-on available to anybody. So if you're using only the Express Edition with an additional NuGet package or, you know, another install, you'll be able to get OData in that experience as well. But today, just letting you know, if you're looking for OData, if I were to do that in Express, I would have gotten an error saying I'm not able to generate the code for you because the tools just aren't there yet. Let's talk a little bit about data binding real quick, or more specifically, data binding debugging. And let's see. So I'm going to add this XAML here, which is a list view with a template that I'm going to data bind to. And oops. And so what I've done here is I have this very simple class, person class, first name, last name. And when we click the button, I'm creating a new list of people, I'm adding some people to it, and I'm setting the item source to that, right? So in my XAML here, I have two text blocks to display the first and last name. So let's go ahead and run this application, and we should see a list of, when we click this, we should see a list of people. Now, I see last names here, but I don't see first name. So, like, this is a common thing, right? What happened to my data binding? How am I supposed to figure that out? If we go back to the IDE, and we notice in the output window, as long as you're in debug mode, so if you're familiar with XAML, one thing that we do is we actually generate a lot of code for you in these g.cs files. One of the things that we do in debug mode for Windows 8 applications is we automatically, in debug mode, wire up to the binding failed event, which is a new event for Windows 8 Metro that allows you to get the binding errors that may have occurred. And so in debug mode, you don't have to do anything. We've done that for you here. And you can see I've got three errors here. Hey, it says there's a binding expression error. Frist name property is not found. So, and I know exactly where to look, and I can say frist name. Okay. First name. And so there we go. So that binding event, that binding failed event, is off of the debug settings object. The best place to wire it up is usually in your app constructor. And you can see that I can wire up binding failed. And it's not totally verbose right now. The main thing that you'll get out of it is that binding expression message. But from a debug standpoint, it's very helpful to very quickly see, hey, like, binding is not working for me. Let me check my binding failed events and see what's going on there. You cannot set breakpoints in the binding like you can in Silverlight. We just couldn't get to that in this release here. So the last thing I wanted to talk about, I'm going to skip going back to slides, is resource management. Now, if you've never localized an application, I encourage you that when you're working with Windows 8 Metro style applications that you do so. It's very easy. One of the things that, so we'll just add a couple folders here. I'm going to add an ENUS folder and a German folder. Now, I'm going to add to these folders a new file type called resources.resw. This should look familiar if you've ever done any localization, right? Does it look like the ResX editor? It's because it is the ResX editor. So we can say, let's actually go in and add some XAML here. And in the XAML here, I just have an image to a path. And actually, let me add these images to my project. Maybe. Isn't that working? And I'm going to name these images the same. Oops. And one thing that we have in our XAML here is we have this button, and I've given it this UID called hello button. Now what we've done is we've given you the ability now to, in your ResW file, is to basically use this kind of dot notation of how I want to localize, and we essentially kind of do a resource merge for you. So I can say, hey, for German, I can say hello, V. Gates. But for English, I want to say hello button content is the property that I'm setting. I just want to say hi. So if I run this now, I should get the English version. I see my picture and a button that says hi. That's fantastic. Now, how do I test the German version? Now, what would you have done before? Search for a language pack, install the language pack, change regional settings, potentially have to reboot. Or, in Windows 8, I can now go to this language preferences pane, add a language, and just say, my preference is German first. And so I'm using an English version of the OS, and I'm adding what's called a language preference list. So I'm saying, my primary OS is English, but I actually prefer German if available. So any app that is localized in German will show me German. So I'm just changing that to German. Run this. Off. So now we notice the button here, though, that's like, well, the translated from my localizer is not going to fit in this button. So how can I change that? I can go back in the German file here, and I can say hello button width needs to be 120. Still not long enough, but you get the point there. So that's one of the new mechanisms of how you can use what we've done in XAML to create localization a little different. Now, we could also use the API level. So if I wanted to get this value out of the API that you want to look at is called the resource loader. And I'm just going to create a new instance of it just to show you. And this would be an example of how you would pull a string out of the resources here. Now, the thing that you will notice is that as a .NET developer, right, when you create a ResX file, what do you get? A strong class representing your resources. That I could type resources.hello button, right? I could have done that. That is something that does not exist today in Windows 8 development. Again, this is one of the examples of Windows Runtime incorporating a common resource model for all platforms and all UI technologies, and the result of which is that we don't get some of the language specifics out of that. But it's very easy to do. This is one of the reasons why we created the XAML XUID capability out of seeing that. These resources are basically compiled and indexed into a file called a PRI, which is a binary file that represents all your resources here. You notice how I got the different image for German than I did for English. And so if you go into your project, you'll see that I have this resources PRI file. Now, the SDK gives you this tool called Make PRI. I can dump that out and look at the representation here. This is an XML representation of the binary format. So it's recognized. Now, notice I didn't have to do anything other than use this naming convention of the BCP47 tags on my folder. I could have actually used them in the file. I could have named it resources.lang- and the lang. But I choose a folder convention, and it recognized, hey, I see two things, and now I'm going to index them. So here it recognized in ENUS, I've got this thing called th.jpg, and that's for English. So whenever it sees a reference to this file called th.jpg, it's going to go and say, do I have something matching the current user's language preference list? So by just putting that image in the naming convention folder, I got that automatically for free. Notice in the image path, I didn't say anything specific about the language. I just used the path that would canonically make sense there. So let me just go back and close out here. So data, there's some local storage options as well. Isolated storage is basically has now mapped to Windows storage. There's the Jet engine if you want like an ISAM-type database available to you. Currently no managed interface on top of that. And then there's SQLite available to you, which there's varying open source libraries there. Mentioned resources, you can download these slides later. So basically, in summary, like you know, this should be very, very familiar to you. I encourage you to look at the Portable Class Library project for code sharing as an option. But you should know that you know XAML and .NET are first-class citizens in Windows 8. You can be successful. You can be great. You know, as I look back on my experiences, you know the platforms have improved and the UI and the UX adapts. And I'll just end with this quote from a friend of mine, Sean Garrity. Like, for Windows 8 specifically, it doesn't matter what technology you're using. It's the experience that makes our customers enjoy what we do, and that's what counts. So thank you for sticking around.